Imagine if you could have your own personal registry for all of the things you browse every day. Well, now you can. Desirelist. With me is its founder and CEO, Eric Scheinkamp. I'm Scott Catoon, and this is TechNorway Live. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So we had mentioned this when we first met, which was actually kind of funny. A little Soho, I was kind of peeping on you, and you guys were getting this whole thing together, and I came up and introduced myself, and you were the founder of Music Dealers, which was something of a big deal in Chicago. And I had the opportunity to meet your brother when I was at Northwestern. He was speaking to the Kellogg class about sort of what Music Dealers was doing. This is 2012, I think. So it was really kind of, in my mind, it was really funny. When I saw you sitting there, I was like, God, he looks familiar. You and your brother are like polar opposites.
Yeah.
But like, you still look very similar.
Yeah.
And I started, you know, eavesdropping for a couple seconds there. I stayed out of, you know, out of the actual business, but I heard what you were doing and immediately was like, I think I need to walk over and talk to this guy. So thank you so much for taking the time to come here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for eavesdropping on the conversation and making it a meaningful interaction.
Well, you know us media types, busybody.
I appreciate it.
So I guess before we get into Desirelist, which is very fascinating and I think is there's kind of a bigger topic in the show than just Desirelist, and that is the ability to find a niche and build a platform on top of it and to know where things are going to be going, to know how money is going to be changing hands and then being able to find build a way to enable people to utilize that, which seems to be a theme for you, Music Dealers and now Desirelist.
Absolutely.
Can you go into your background a little bit as an entrepreneur or just as a person, as a problem solver?
Sure. I mean, it's always been finding the gaps where people are having current frustrations, where is technology disrupting what we know for, you know, which it seems like it's a problem and hurting, like we saw in the music industry, but where does it provide actually opportunity? And that's what I've always focused on. And it came out of a need. It wasn't something that I, you know, actively did intentionally. It was the fact that I was an artist manager. And in 1999, I launched a record label when I was graduating Lincoln Park High School. And of course, 1999 was the year that Napster was introduced and crushed and destroyed all record labels as we know them. So it was an interesting time to sit back and kind of see, well, people aren't going to stop making music. People aren't going to stop creating art, but people are going to stop paying for it in the traditional way that we know. So what's the future look like? And, you know, how can that technology that's hurting the industry actually be used to benefit the artists and continue giving it life?
So you take that over to Desirelist, which essentially, I mean, you'll obviously give the best version of what Desirelist is, but in my mind, what's particularly interesting is if you're like me and you're on Amazon or you're on any you know platform for that matter, you see things all the time, and it's just maybe not the right time to buy it, or it's not a gift, or it's like, well, you know, maybe I'll buy that, you know, for myself for Christmas, or I'll buy it for my wife, which is really for me, you know, down the road. This is a situation where you enable other people who are sort of looking at other things, and that would be cool for that person, but they can just buy it for somebody else, essentially like a wedding registry or a baby registry for every person on earth.
Yeah, it turns your mobile phone into a wedding registry gun that's with you 24 hours a day. So whether you're watching a commercial or you're walking down the street and you see something in a window or you're browsing online, it's a way to save, share anything from anywhere. Whether that's for you personally and you just want to organize things that you need for the house or for kids for back to school or for parents to share their back to school items with the grandparents or whatever it might be. It's an organizational system that you could carry throughout life. And then when it is time for a graduation gift or somebody's moving or they're getting married or they're having a baby or just any life event, it comes into play and it's actually incredibly handy.
I would say so. It also, I think, is going to have an impact on how I choose my friends.
Yeah.
Because I want to have I want to make sure I find some giving friends who can, you know, who are going to buy all this stuff that I want.
I mean, surprisingly, it does really enhance personal relationships. Because if you look at, you know, the gift card industry, there's $135 billion a year spent on gift cards. Main reason is I don't have time to shop for you, but I do want you to get something that you want, but I have no idea what you want.
Yeah.
So here's a gift card. But over $1 billion go wasted. They sit in drawers unused. And just going a little
extra effort.
That's what
George Bush is trying to solve over at Raise.
Yeah, so exactly. But if you look, you know, you take one extra second, which actually saves you a lot of time to look on someone's desire list and see, you know, what do they actually want? And you become a more thoughtful, meaningful, engaged friend just by taking that step and getting it off their desire list.
Well, you gave me a great example. Was it your niece, nephew, something like that? Yeah, tell that story because I think that's honestly – it really does encompass the problem. Like, I do care. It's not like I don't, you know, I don't want to, nobody wants to give crappy gifts. Like,
right.
So, you know.
You know, where the whole thing came from is I grew a company out of my living room. It became a global company, and I had to move pretty consistently for a number of years. I moved to California for a couple of years. I moved to London for 2.5 years. And during that time, my brother and sister had kids, and which I didn't really get to spend much time with besides the holidays when I would come back home. So when I moved back from London, I wanted to be seen as a great uncle. I wanted to get something really special. My sister let me know, if you want to get something for her daughter, Talia, she said, this is exactly what she wants. So I went to the store to find her what she wanted. And while I was there, I found something for my 4-year-old niece, my brother's daughter, that I thought would be amazing. I thought she would love it. I spent more than I should have on it, but I wanted to have a great impact. So I gave the gift to Talia, whose mom told me what she wanted, and it was the best experience. She opened it. She loved it. She jumped, wrapped her arms around me, and she said, I love you. You're the best. And I was more excited to give the gift to, you know, Josie, my 4-year-old niece. And she opened it super excited, and her face just dropped. She stared at it. She dropped the present on the floor and started crying and literally said, you are the worst uncle ever. And it was crushing, and it was heartbreaking. Afterwards, my brother said, you know, you should have just asked me. I have a list of all the things that she wants on the notes in my phone. And that's exactly, you know, where this came into mindset. It's like, this is ridiculous. There's an app, there's something, there's a solve for everything in the world, except when it comes to buying people a gift, except when, you know, you're trying to make a meaningful interaction, engagement with somebody. So we have to solve that. And that's where the whole concept came from.
So how do you guys plan on sort of launching this? When does it launch? When can people start, you know, at least testing it or using it? And sort of what do you see as the growth model for this? How do you get this in everyone's, get everyone to use this?
Sure. So we've been working on it the last 18 months, 19 months actually, and tomorrow is the first time that we're opening up publicly. So we've been in, you know, private alpha, beta, public beta, but tomorrow we actually go live for the world to use. Lots of good user feedback already. One of the struggles obviously is the go-to-market strategy and how do you get everybody in the world to put it on their phone and start using it. And what we found is one of the best resources is boutiques. Boutiques struggle very much once somebody leaves the store, and it's a great tool for them to carry on a conversation with their consumers once they walk out of that store. It is, you know, really great for bloggers. You know, influence bloggers have taken the greatest liking to this and use it the most so far, where they're able to put all the things that they recommend for traveling or for beauty or fashion or health. And we're actually activating a contest with a couple bloggers starting tomorrow, which is, you know, this is fashion men's style bloggers. They're putting their top 5 accessories, and then it's a contest for people to add a couple accessories to that list that they think are really special and really unique. And we see that type of engagement really increases usage. Average time spent on the site is about 17 minutes, which is,
it's pretty insane.
It's pretty insane. So the challenge is obviously getting them there. Once they're there, they're pretty engaged, which is great. So that is the challenge. It's a test and learn process, and that's where we're at right now. Is, you know, we've got a bunch of different go-to-market strategies, and we're kind of, you know, seeing which ones work, and then we'll double down before the holidays.
That sounds like a pretty solid plan. What would you say are sort of the biggest things you're worried about with this?
Yeah, I mean, the worry is it a real need? Yeah. Do people really need this to be solved, or is it a nice to have? We have found a couple of go-to-market strategies that we thought were just pure go-to-market strategies that we found a solution where, you know, retailers are actually even willing to pay for certain services that we offer through our existing platform, but we have an enterprise solution for them, which I'm not supposed to talk about yet. I would love to come back during the holidays to update on that aspect of it. But, you know, it's a matter of, you know, this was an idea that we had. We thought there was something there. We've been testing. Yes, there is something here. Is it enough of a need for people to take action? Is it enough of a need for it to actually be a successful business? And of course, that's the challenge. But we found a couple places where we know people are willing to pay. We started getting our first checks from Amazon, even in the testing phases. So it seems like there is something here. I mean, the last 10 years of my life, I've been working with brands. I've been working with media companies, retailers, helping them brace themselves and learn from the failings of the music industry. So the technologies that hurt the music industry and the brick and mortar stores like Blockbuster Video and Tower Records that got crushed and went bankrupt and shut down when iTunes came out. And everybody thought iTunes was the end all be all, but it was just the beginning. And it gave rise to Spotify and Pandora and these other platforms that live on top of it. But even Spotify had, you know, significant issues at first because they said, hey, come listen to anything you want. We've got 30 million songs for free. But what they found was people would get there, they didn't know how to use the site. So it took that curation, it took a little bit of hand-holding to make those songs and that platform valuable. The exact same thing is happening in retail right now, where you look at, you know, the Sports Authority and the Sears and the Radio Shack. It's very similar to Tower Records and Blockbuster Videos, who are being crushed by Amazon. But Amazon isn't the end-all be-all. Amazon is the beginning. And there are going to be platforms that live on top and help create a better experience for consumers. And that's exactly where we sit. We sit on top of the Amazons and the digitalization of this, you know, the commerce world. And create something that's a little bit more meaningful to consumers.
And like that, you rounded out my show as I brought it up in the beginning. This is fascinating. In fact, we've got on Tuesday coming up next week is the wearable tech showcase for Technori, and we've had a couple of people say, "Didn't you just do a wearable tech?" And you know, we've been hearing about wearables forever, and we've got sort of a couple companies that I think are doing exactly what you're talking about, but in the wearable space, in the clothing itself space. There's going to be all these different pieces of technology. They'll be the first thing, like you can now wear, you know, this is chip embedded. You can do whatever. But then there's like 1,000 layers that can go on top of that. And I think you do an amazing job of identifying it. I think one of the things that about you that's different, it's part of the success. I think that why you were successful with Music Dealers and why this is successful or going to be successful is you've got experience working with the Coca-Colas of the world, the Towers, the like major brands, you know, and that's ultimately when we have a lot of entrepreneurs on the show, the one thing that they unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, are green behind the ear and that they haven't dealt with the big brands and they end up, once they scale to a certain point, it turns into like walking right into the buzzsaw.
Yeah,
because they don't realize how things operate and how slow and methodical, and they don't have the enough cash to basically wait it out.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's the most beautiful thing about this team. With my last company, we were all uneducated, hungry young kids, which you need, and I'd put that type of team up against any senior team from the beginning. But while having that, with this new venture, you know, my co-founder, she's been the chief marketing director of communications at the Coca-Cola company for the last 14 and a half years. And she quit Coke to join full time to work on Desireless because she saw the opportunity with the first person data that we have that brands are dying for, you know, the resources that we're able to turn around and bring back to the retailers who desperately need this type of engagement from their consumers and to know what their consumers are actually putting their hands up and saying, I want, rather than the money that's spent on marketing that's not reaching as many people as it used to. So it is the type of team that knows how to go into these big retailers, which those are the type of partnerships that will make or break a startup. When we partnered, you know, with Coca-Cola and became their global music partner, they put us in London, they put us in Mexico City, they put us all over the world. And, you know, for a kid who was making music out of my living room,
scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, it changed our lives. It changed everything. It changed tens of thousands of artists' lives all over the world. So to go into it with that mindset and talking to these retailers right now and understanding what kind of solve we could bring to their landscape and why Walmart just bought Jet.com for $3.3 billion and, you know, why Target is, you know, we're not trying to compete with Amazon, but everybody else is because the $110 billion a year that Amazon is doing right now is coming from brick and mortar that used to be in brick and mortar stores. And so there needs to be solve and people, you know, they need to do something to continue to have brick and mortar stores and also transition into the digital world. And, you know, that's a tool that we're trying to build from day one.
I think you introduced in that sort of point the perfect final question here. And I think one of them, for at least for me, is as a serial entrepreneur, I won't call you a serial entrepreneur. You've had one large thing that took a long period of time, but you're on to the next one. What is the one thing, positive and negative, that you've noticed, or positive or negative, that you've noticed between the first go round, totally like just passion and blind, we're just going to do this, and the second company go round? What's the big thing?
I think ignorance is a very powerful tool. That, you know, there was when I was 23 to 25, when I was kind of starting Music Dealers, there was no worry in the world. There was nobody who could stop us. There was nothing to be scared of. It was just, you know, put your head down and go. And now, seeing all the horrible things that could happen in business, and all the things to be worried about, it's the difference of what keeps you up at night.
Sure.
You know, and you're a little bit more protective, and you know, you try not to be scared of some of the negative things that you've seen out there, and kind of just put your head down and go. But you know, obviously, once you live those type of experiences, they're going to impact the way you know you operate your life and you move forward. So I think you know the ignorance of bliss is very real. But that's why you surround yourself with young kids who are just go-getters and hungry and haven't had any of that those painful business experiences yet. And they're just on the team to keep on driving forward. And when you walk in and you're kind of scratching, you know, your chin and saying, is this going to work? They're not thinking that. They're thinking about, like, this is how we're going to make it work. And it's a beautiful thing to surround yourself with good people from, you know.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I've had similar experiences where you come through and just like, I mean, the things that I've seen and then going to work the next day, it's unbelievable sometimes that I'm able to like get up and go to work the next day knowing what you know. But I guess from my side, it's always just trying to, probably doesn't help me in my personal life, but I try to put that stuff aside when it goes to work time and you step into the meeting, you step into whatever, you've got to like just clean it all out and look right at that person and make your judgments and live in the moment. Because if you start thinking about what the future and the past, you end up making bad decisions.
Sure. I mean, the nice thing is you could feel confident looking across the table and saying, I have something that's going to bring value to your business. I have something that's going to increase your bottom line. That's going to increase sales. It's going to increase engagement, and feel confident knowing that. And if you have that, then you've got a real business.
Very cool. Thank you, Eric, for taking the time to come here. I'm looking forward to Desire List going out tomorrow.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Of course. Excellent. As mentioned before, Technori is on this coming Tuesday, August 30th, 6 p.m. at Chase Auditorium. It's the Wearable Works theme. Lots of really cool companies are going to be on stage, including Rhythmio. If you haven't gotten tickets, make sure you go to technori.com/tickets and get yourself a couple of tickets for the event. Use the promo code WGN and save yourself 20%. You can stream this episode and more on WGNBusiness.com or download each episode on iTunes and stay up to date by following us on Facebook and Twitter @Technori or follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.